Happy Monday. It's the Fan Pregame, SportsCenter, SportsNet 590 The Fan for the next hour. We've got lots to go through, not much to promo tonight, but we are a couple days away from the World Series. Finally solidified.
Yeah, the only bad thing about this matchup, which is Los Angeles Dodgers versus the New York Yankees, that we got to wait till Friday for game one. I understand television and all that stuff, but I would really, really love to see more than one. Like, I'd love to react to a game over the course of this week, but we won't be able to do that. We will just preview one.
By next Monday, we'll be do they play every single game? Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
It could be almost over. The travel day, there's probably on Sunday, so.
Nonetheless, we're going to bring in Russell Dorsey of MLB Network, Apple TV, and Yahoo in about 10 minutes to set up what we are going to call, and you can agree with us or not, the best World Series ever before it's happened. Our text line is open. You can tell us who you're cheering for at 590-590. Maybe that's a tough decision. I think maybe Toronto Blue Jays fans might have a tough decision. But for Justin and I, we've come up with quite a few reasons why this could be the best World Series ever.
Yeah, where to start? I mean, you have the MVP of each league on each team, and they've already won MVPs, so that definitely bodes well. For at least the star power of the series, there's going to be very little room on the marquee for Fox when they're promoting this series. But it's not just like the one superstar per team. There's multiple superstars per team, guys who are playing at a superstar level that aren't necessarily, you know, regular season superstars. It just seems like it's loaded with star power, and they're the two biggest markets in baseball.
Well, like, that's what
going
you want,
to head to head. You can't really complain with it.
I think in reference, or like in retrospect, looking at last year's World Series, not to say that both those markets didn't have, you know, passionate fans, but I think the easy way to start this off is it's New York versus LA. Mm-hmm. And those are two of the major markets in the United States. They are very historical baseball markets. They're the most ever matchup, like the most consistent ever World Series matchup, but it's been a long time since they did face off against each other. And I think just having two of the biggest markets in the discussion will bring so many more eyeballs. Like, I'm anticipating this being one of maybe the most watched ever internationally, as well as we know there's like a lot of international interest with some of the players. But yeah, when you think about the people that are making the graphics, and we have great people at Sportsnet to do this, you're going to have way too many heads. You know, you just do Judge versus Shohei, but then where's Soto? Where's Stanton? Where's Betts? Where's Freeman? Like, there's a bunch of different faces you can put in there. And I think that's the most exciting thing. If you're excited to watch a final or a World Series or a championship, don't you want to see the best go against the best? Like a real size up moment. And that's what we got with Dodgers and Yankees.
Oh, so the best will have a crowning achievement, whether it's Shohei Ohtani or Aaron Judge or Juan Soto or whomever. But there are real legacy stakes here too, because it's not like these guys are that accomplished yet, despite playing in these major markets, despite having the distinguished awards that they have, at least Judge and Shohei Ohtani, they have not been in this position before. Juan Soto being really the only guy at the front of the marquee, at least for the Yankees, that has, already won a World Series, but even him has a legacy stake there. How many World Series can Juan Soto win in his career? He's already got one. He could have two here. He's just turning 26 in a couple days. Juan Soto is going to sign a $600+ million contract in the offseason, likely. And what's that going to mean for his career if he stays with the Yankees and how good that team can continue to be? So with Shohei and Judge, yeah, there's no promise that either of them are going to get another chance. It's probably likely, given that they play on really good teams. But Shohei Ohtani might be the best baseball player of all time, but can you say that if he's never won a World Series? So he has an opportunity here. And Aaron Judge is quietly kind of up there in age. What, he's like 32 years old? Aaron Judge is a big man. How long is he going to be able to do it for? Aaron Judge leaving New York without having won a World Series would be unbelievably disappointing, given all the regular season success that he's had. And also with the managers, you know, Aaron Boone, successful career. Dave Roberts has won a World Series. But these are largely two guys that are criticized at a routine and high level. And yet here, one of them will have the opportunity to rise above all that and call themselves a World Series champion. So not only is the marquee set, but these guys have really important things to win that are right there to be grasped. And I think Shohei and Judge are number one and number two in whatever order it is when it comes to how big it will be to actually win this series.
I saw this joke quite a few times online, so I'm not going to take credit for it, but it's also a huge World Series for people that buy generic baseball hats. A lot of people walk Definitely around with is. Dodgers hats, and a lot of people walk around with Yankees hats. It's like Urban Outfitters is going to explode on your screen. So it's a big series for people that just love
baseball
hats. A lot
of people can just
hats.
Dust one off and be like, hey, I got that.
I think people probably have both.
Storage. Yeah, probably.
And for whatever fit they want to wear. But that one's more fun. I'm excited for what is going to be a lot of high-powered offense. We're going to see that tweet a lot about low-hanging fruit. And I think if anyone wanted to go back and change their words, that might have been something somebody in this market might have wanted to rephrase, because it has been home run mania between both of these teams. And I think if you look at the strength, I don't think that pitching would be the first thing on either of these teams' lists. It is going to be, hopefully, you know, a lot of high scoring games. And that is what's so much fun about watching baseball. And maybe both of these series that we just watched, the NLCS and ALCS, I think the ALCS became more exciting because it felt like it could go back and forth, like flipping on the game. The NLCS only had one lead change, but they were really, really high scoring. But most of the time felt like it was like out of reach. I'm hoping that we see a lot of home runs, a lot of moments where there's a legacy at bat and someone like a Juan Soto delivers, or a Shohei Ohtani delivers, or whomever. Like, these guys on the field hit the ball out of the park, and that's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, leads should not be safe in a series where, you know, the high end bats are what's going to loom over probably everything, given that there is an absence of starting pitching. The bullpens have performed. I mean, the Dodgers bullpen probably on paper better than the Yankees, but it's going to be gettable at certain points for both teams up and down the pitching roster. Another one, you know, for sports media nerds, we're going to get a gauge on the upper limit of baseball popularity with this series, right? Oh, these are the two biggest markets, New York and LA, Shohei, Judge. You got both MVPs. You got the biggest teams in baseball with the biggest payrolls. You got the biggest media markets backing both of them. So you're going to get the peak interest at this current moment when it comes to baseball in America, Canada, North America as a whole. So we're going to get some information on just how big baseball still is, how popular baseball can be. There will be no like, hey, you know, if LA was in this series, maybe it would rate a little bit better. Or if it's like last year when it was Arizona and Texas, there's a lot of yeah buts built into that, but there aren't any with this. This is the best offering Major League Baseball can put out there, at least in terms of interest in North America. And it's going to spit out a metric that will tell you exactly where baseball fits in the sports landscape. And it's probably going to go up against some NFL games. We just actually cracked the code. It's not going to be on Sunday. It's starting Friday so that they avoid Sunday and the NFL slate, I imagine. But we are going to see where it ranks against a Thursday night football game, a Monday night football game, everything else is going on in the sports world. We're going to know how popular baseball is by the end of this series.
Friday, 8:08 first pitch. Saturday, 8:08 first pitch. Those ones are in L.A. Then we've got Monday, 8:08 first pitch in New York. Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and then that would be Sunday, I believe, right after that. Saturday. So
you avoid a Thursday and a Sunday.
It's pretty smart.
Very strategic.
We've got your texts open here at 590-590. A lot of people weighing in who you're cheering for in the World Series. So here's Steph from the Beaches. I have to say that I'm not really a fan of either team as a whole, but it is going to make me cheer for some amazing baseball. As for who I'm cheering for Teoscar Hernandez. As someone who worked in the Jays for almost a decade in the front office until 2022, he was one of the most down-to-earth and humble and nicest guys I've ever met, not to mention his wife and family were just incredible. So let's go, Teo. I'm very much in agreement of that one. I think I'm going to cheer for the Dodgers. It feels like the lesser of two evils, and I know if you listen to JD's show today, he called it the Nightmare Bowl, and for Jays fans specifically, and I think there's a lot of validity to that. You're going to either have an AL East opponent and sometimes rival in the Yankees. Sometimes it doesn't feel like a rivalry anymore, but have them win and rub it in your face forever is going to be tough. Or the Dodgers and the one that got away and Shohei Ohtani, like that might be the lesser of two evils in a sense, but Teo and Kevin Kiermaier and that story, Freddie Freeman, who's Canadian, like I think there's more wholesome pieces with the Dodgers, and maybe sometimes seeing the guy that goes and gets paid and goes to the new market and wins, like that is in itself something that some people might think is great. I don't know. Shohei winning and getting everything he wanted right away, it'd be interesting to watch. But I think for those reasons and Teo specifically, I kind of want to see them.
Yeah, there's definitely a Jays related storyline. Teoscar Hernandez, I think for me, looms over the Shohei Ohtani spurns a nation headline, but it's definitely there for some people. And then there's a forever hatred with AL East rival in the New York Yankees. And yet, you know, there's a lot of reason to get behind what they're doing. I mean, Juan Soto is an unbelievable watch. Aaron Judge is a freak. Giancarlo Stanton has adopted freakness. They are unbelievable to watch. The Yankees and Dodgers both roll up under that category. And I guess for people in this market, you got to choose the lesser of two evils.
And maybe there's a tiny bit of hope that if the Yankees lose, Soto might want to leave and come to the Blue Jays. And that is the most far-fetched thing I could try to spin, but
get him down to Dunedin.
You never know.
Convince you.
All right. To continue helping us tee this up, which is still a few days away, but we're excited to start. Russell Dorsey of MLB Network, Yahoo Sports, and Apple TV. Russ, appreciate you jumping on. How are you?
What's going on, guys? I'm doing well. How are you?
We're good. We just spent the last 10 minutes convincing ourselves that this could be the best World Series ever. Where do you fall on that, you know, premature but exciting title for this?
Well, I don't think that's a bad place to start. And I think when you look at two best records in baseball, making it to the World Series isn't something that happens all the time. I think you guys know, as well as every baseball fan out there, just because you have the best team in the regular season doesn't mean that's going to make you the best team come postseason. And we're going to have two of the presumable MVPs in this World Series as well. Two big markets. I've been comparing it to the Celtics and Lakers of the World Series. You know what I mean? In terms of that popularity, the fan bases, the national spectacle, global spectacle that it will be. It's awesome. And I think for baseball, this has been a fantastic postseason. And this seems like the perfect culmination and crescendo of that. So I think it's going to be a great World Series. You have some of the best players in the world on both teams, and I think it's going to be a cap of great baseball that we've seen.
So it is definitely perfect for Major League Baseball in terms of the teams, but have you considered the what if like it doesn't rate all that well, if the best baseball can offer without the excuse of, oh, the Arizona Diamondbacks were in the World Series last year. What if Dodgers Yankees doesn't explode for Major League Baseball? Have you considered that possibility?
I don't think that I have a hard time believing that would happen. One, because every television metric in each round has shown that ratings are through the roof, the best that we've seen in 10 or more years here in the States, at least. And I think when you look at the markets themselves, you have L.A., you have New York, you have people who don't usually watch baseball will be tuning into the World Series. I also think that the global appeal of having two of the best players in the sport in the World Series, that matters, right? Like, what sport do you not want the best player in the postseason and then in the championship? It's like the NBA not having LeBron in the finals, the NFL not having Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl, in hockey not having Connor McDavid in the Stanley Cup final. Like, you want your premier talents, the best players in the world, on the biggest stage. And because of that, I would be absolutely floored if, on the TV side, this World Series didn't do crazy numbers.
You got a great article up at Yahoo that you wrote just a few days ago about Shohei Ohtani showing like a little bit of a different side of himself, his emotional evolution.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about Shohei Ohtani in that sense, because we don't get to see as much, obviously, as media covering it from the other side of the continent, basically, and he doesn't speak so much. But you've noticed that this first year as a Dodger has shown something a little bit different about Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, like when Shohei came to the States, he was this guy that was basically this baseball cyborg, right? He was like this kid that was built in a lab to be the best player in the world, and he became that. And even as he had taken the baton from his teammate Mike Trout as the best player in the world, you didn't really see him show too much emotion. He would smile, he'd wave, he was very memeable and had, you know, made funny faces, but, you know, was never a guy that, you know, celebrated a ton or anything like that. But when he signed with the Dodgers, because of a lot of the guys on that roster, you started to see, you know, a different side of him. You know, he started, you know, watching some homers, enjoying the moment, you know, screaming a let's go, let's bleep and go,
yeah.
You know, and I think that's a side that I think fans enjoy because it shows the human side of Shohei Ohtani that we hadn't seen for 6 years when he was in Anaheim with the Angels. And with the Dodgers, I think it's a comfort thing. It's something I asked Shohei about. It's something I've asked Dave Roberts about. I think when Shohei came to the Dodgers, winning was the priority, where, you know, in Anaheim, you're losing, you're not going to necessarily enjoy it as much. Now that you're enjoying winning, you're winning often, you're at the peak of your powers as a player. And I think, you know, something I've asked Dave Roberts about, he realizes that he's the best player in the world. And there is something, an enjoyable feeling of that when you're able to thrive in big moments. And seeing Shohei in these big moments where, in every sport, you have the player where the big moments find you, and he's becoming that guy. And he also is able to rise to the occasion in those moments, right? To hit a walk-off grand slam for 40-40, to have a three-homer game when you go 50-50, the first player to go 50-50, your debut in the postseason, you hit a three-run homer to tie the ball game. Like, that's everything that you want in the best player in the world. And, you know, he's enjoying these moments, and you could tell that everybody around him also sees that he's enjoying those moments.
Yeah, made for the big stage, and now he has the biggest stage. So it'll be interesting to see what Shohei Ohtani is able to do in the World Series. But as he's evolved, I feel like the Dodgers have evolved too. And it's not just getting Shohei Ohtani, at least in my opinion. You know, this Dodgers team has been, frankly, made fun of for the last couple of years. People invalidate their championship because it was won in a bubble and it wasn't exactly how it was supposed to be. And how could they underachieve this much given their payroll and how talented they've been for the last better part of a decade? But they feel like they have a different attitude. And maybe it's because they just have Shohei, but I feel like they have a different attitude across the board. What have you seen that's different with the Dodgers this year compared to previous iterations?
I think you're spot on. And I think there has been a mindset shift for them. I do think it's easy to see that, okay, yeah, we have the biggest payroll, but they've had a lot of things not go right, right? When you lose, you know, Mookie Betts to a broken hand for months. When you lose Freddie Freeman that last week of the season, you know, he's playing on one leg right now. Their entire rotation has been turned upside down. They have 9 starters on the IL right now. And I think there's this mentality of we can't make excuses. And we've seen teams, and I wrote about this last night, like we've seen teams that have had fewer injuries make excuses. And it's easy to say, oh, the Dodgers have the biggest payroll in baseball, so they should be here. It wasn't guaranteed, and it's never guaranteed. And, you know, they were facing a Padres team that was the best team to me in the postseason. And facing a 2-1 deficit where I believed that they were going to go home, they didn't. They fought back. They tied that series up, won game 5 at home, and then moved on, and then used that momentum to beat the Mets. Like, this isn't your same old Dodgers team. Like, this team is tough. And I don't know if Dodgers teams in the past were as tough as this team is. Like, they have a mentality where they're not fazed when they get down, when they get beaten, when they get blown out. None of that bothers them. And I think they've built this callus over the years. And yes, I do think having the best player in the world in Shohei Ohtani helps with that. But I do think there's this collective mindset shift.
The Yankees, meanwhile, feel like they've returned to what they were previously, which was the biggest and baddest baseball team in the world, right? Like, Bronx Bombers were always supposed to have 3 guys in the heart of the order that could absolutely destroy you. And now, for the first time, it seems like with Aaron Judge, since they got Juan Soto, they have it because Giancarlo Stanton is an absolute monster right now. Is this a return to the glory years in many ways for the New York Yankees?
I mean, for Giancarlo, he's going to the fountain of youth. You know, like, he looks like a younger version of himself. Maybe not athletically, because he's still not moving around that well, but it's easy to, when you get to the bottom of the ballpark, you can trot around those bases. But I think for the Yankees, you have a guy who was always up for that best player of the world conversation, best hitter in baseball to me for sure, in Aaron Judge, and what he's able to do. Pairing him with Juan Soto was the best thing that the Yankees did. You know, I think that's the best fit for Juan Soto. I know there are going to be a lot of teams that want to bid for his services here in the next couple of weeks after the World Series. But I think when you look at the Yankees, this is a team that when they are firing on all cylinders, they are some of the best, you know, around in terms of depth, in terms of their star power. Like, they can do a lot of things right. And I think what's going to be their advantage in this series will be their starting pitching, what they can do at the top with Gerrit Cole, you know, Clark Schmidt, Carlos Rodon, Luis Gil, who's probably going to be the AL Rookie of the Year. Like, they're going to be able to do some things to the Dodgers that they haven't seen yet, like to be able to have a full complement of starters when the Dodgers are really trying to go day by day with their starting rotation. So it'll be interesting to watch, you know, two teams that have a lot of star power go back and forth. But I think the Yankees, where their advantage lies is in their rotation.
Yeah, that Gerrit Cole named game one started today by the Yankees, which is still a couple days away. But having that, you know, let's say you give the Yankees the advantage in the starting pitching. Maybe you give the Dodgers the advantage in some of their power. It really comes down to these small X factors between each team. And I don't know what your pick is for the World Series. You can give it to us now. But where do you see that upper hand for each team? Like, what needs to go right for the Yankees to win? What needs to go right for the Dodgers to win? Because you can kind of level it out pretty evenly when you go across from starting pitching to bullpen to star power. And what is it that's going to take that team over the top?
I haven't made my prediction quite yet. Still thinking about that. We're doing our baseball team over at Yahoo. Mm. We're going to put that out in the next couple of days. But I think where the advantage is, or the advantage for the Dodgers, is that mindset that we talked about and their ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark, right? I think they have, and showed in the NLCS against the Mets, that they have a lot of depth too, right? Like, they were able to put a 10 spot up on the Mets yesterday, and it wasn't just about Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani. Freddie Freeman didn't even play in the game, right? I think that's something big that we are not even talking about a ton. Like, Freddie Freeman has not been playing, you know, as much as you would expect to see a superstar like Freddie Freeman, and they've been able to thrive. I think that's where that advantage lies for the Dodgers, where the Yankees, if Judge and Soto aren't rolling, you're really worried about if the Yankees can score runs, even with Giancarlo swinging the bat the way he is. But I think, you know, the advantage for the Yankees is going to be that starting pitching. You know, if the Dodgers don't get five innings out of Jack Flaherty, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Walker Buehler, and you got to go into that bullpen, it changes how they can manage their series, because at some point they're going to have a bullpen game in the World Series. And if you're digging into your bullpen, you know, in game two, game three, in game three, four, and five, where you have no off day in the middle, it could get really tough. So I think that is where, for each team, they have an advantage. But you're right. I think it is pretty balanced in terms of what each of these teams can do. I think something we're not thinking about is the managers. You know, Dave Roberts and Aaron Boone. Dave Roberts has outmanaged, you know, Mike Schilt with the Padres in the first round, and Carlos Mendoza, who's done a great job with the Mets this season, you know, in the NLCS. So I think the battle in the dugouts between Aaron Boone and Dave Roberts will be a good one to watch.
Okay, we'll wait patiently for your official prediction. It looks like you'll be putting it up on your Yahoo page as well. Russell, we appreciate you jumping on. Russell Dorsey of MLB Network, Yahoo Sports, and Apple TV. Enjoy the last couple weeks of baseball. It's going to be a great, great couple stretches here.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much. Russell Dorsey. Yeah, it's going to be, like, I don't know. Who do you think is going to win?
I think
what's your official prediction?
I'm leaning Dodgers. But I do wonder, you kind of touched on it there, the value of Gerrit Cole in this series. Because there's only one, like, real dominant starting pitcher that we're going to see the entire time. Carlos Rodon is not that guy. I don't think Luis Gil is that guy. Jack Flaherty, we've just seen him blow up. Yamamoto's not that guy. Like, the best the Dodgers can do might be the bullpen game, where they just roll out guys who can absolutely wipe away batters one inning at a time. But Gerrit Cole is a legitimate ace, a legitimate Cy Young winner, a legitimate stud pitcher, and he's the only one in this series. And they can use him twice, maybe three times. And what's that worth in the end? Because if it's just going to be fireworks every game and there's one stopper with the Yankees, that could be the difference in the series.
It could be. A couple more texts here before we take a break. We're going to shift over to a little hockey talk with Kristen Shilton on the other side of the break. But we're taking your text at 59590. Who do you want to win the World Series? Send that in to us. Here's one, no name. But in regards to the World Series, I'm cheering for the Dodgers. I want to see Hernandez and Kiermaier get a World Series ring, especially Kevin before he retires. I think that one's...
I'm team especially Teo. Like, I would love to see Teo win.
Great.
I would love to see Teo win. I don't know how you could.
Brian from Toronto says, great talent on each side. Understanding the waiting till Friday, though, I think it's ridiculous. Start times at 8:10 Eastern, 3 hours of play, you're going to lose the kids. Yes, LA is a major market. Giants, A's, Angels fans, though, won't suddenly become Dodger fans. Ohtani being in, given the gambling that he did, bad PR for the game. I think Yankees in six.
Yankees in six, okay.
All right. TJ from Port McNichol. For Blue Jays fans, this World Series is like having a girl from your friend group that you have a major crush on going on a date with you. A year passes and you're still thinking about them. And now they are dating your worst enemy.
That's almost too real.
And your
text.
Friend group accepts them into the group. Did this happen, TJ?
is this so a real story? TJ.
Oh, that's too bad. We've got best World Series. This is a Texan saying. A Yankees versus Dodgers in 1977. Reggie Jackson slams 3 home runs, establishes his legacy as Mr. October. Okay, so
there you go.
We could see something
some mystery
like
here.
It. Jim from Oshawa, cheering for the Dodgers. Love to see Teo and Kevin Kiermaier get a ring, especially KK going out on top.
A lot of especially KKs.
This one's a little bit less positive, and then we'll take a break.
Okay.
Sean says, I'm cheering for an earthquake. This might be the first World Series in 30 years I don't watch. I hate teams that try to buy championships, and the Dodgy Dodgers might be worse than the Yankees that way now. MLB has to close that deferring loophole, so the Yankees will most likely win because Soto is clutch.
Hey, listen, if this is any indication of what it takes to win a World Series,
money.
Again, last year it wasn't the case. Of course, it wasn't the case, although Texas can definitely spend. Spending is pretty much required. Mm. You can't be at the bottom of the barrel and expect to get by.
Most likely not. Okay, we're going to shift over to some hockey on the other side of the break. Kristen Shilton, NHL writer at ESPN, will join us. There's one hockey game tonight. Just one. It is the Leafs and the Lightning on Amazon Prime. Tomorrow, every single team will play, though.
Yeah, it's
so this is almost the polar opposite.
But it's okay.
We're going from one to everyone. We'll tee that up with our look around the NHL as well and get some best bets on the other side of the break.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We've got to mention we came into the room and we just felt this aura. Legendary aura. Matt Sundin was in the studio right before us and he didn't want to stay to come on our show, but he was on Real Kipper and Bourne. You can catch their podcast, of course, and they got to hang out with Matt.
Yeah, Sammy got the pick.
Yeah, Sammy was excited.
Did he get a one-on-one pick?
No, I heard him talking about it before. He was nervous for that.
Yeah.
You can sell it with a group pick, you know?
You can sell it with the group pick.
A little less like super fanny, but you know, it's Matt Sundin.
Quick one?
Quick,
just whisper in the ear of Matt Sundin.
That's good. But it's good. He's got a new book. He's promoting that. And we have one game to talk about tonight, which is easy for us. We'll bring in another legend, Kristen Shilton, joining us of ESPN. Kristen, how's it going?
I'm great. Thanks, guys. How you doing?
We're good. That makes it easy for us tonight. Just one game, Leafs, Lightning. it's weird because then tomorrow every other team, every team plays. Just the I guess the switch of that is quite the momentum move. But we'll look into Leafs Lightning tonight. Let's start with the head coach because Craig Berube obviously coming in with a lot of anticipation, a lot of excitement. He's going to play his former team this week, and that'll be obviously a money on the board night. But for you, when you look at what Craig Berube has done for this team, it seems more physical. It seems more accountable. What have you seen from the newest head coach?
You know, I thought it was interesting because when Berube was hired, you know, people talked about how he was almost like the anti-Sheldon Keefe. Mm. Like the Leafs were trying to go in this completely different direction from their previous coach and that they were going to install this completely different mindset and mentality. And, you know, Berube was going to be the one who, you know, just completely overhauled, you know, what the Leafs were doing from, you know, under Keefe until now. And I do think that there have been some changes in terms of obviously their structure and how they play. But in terms of, I think the biggest impact is it's just that Berube seems to, you know, he just has the Leafs playing, I think, in a way that, yes, is more physical, but it just also feels to me more straightforward. There just doesn't seem to be as much of the, I don't want to use the term fluff, but it's just, it's very straightforward. It's very like, this is what we're doing. This is how we go. It's not, there's not a lot of overthinking. And I feel like that's where the Leafs have been stalled before, is that you can almost like overcoach sometimes. You can try too hard to try too many different things and work too many combinations. And I really feel like Berube has just been very patient in figuring out what works for this team in particular. I think just using Max Pacioretty as an example, he has, you know, he's coming, looks like he'll be back in the lineup tonight after being a healthy scratch for a couple games. And there's no, but it never seemed like that was some sort of like, oh, it was a punishment that, you know, Pacioretty was out, or that Berube wanted, you know, the team to be playing a different way than what, you know, Pacioretty could offer. It was just, he's just to me more like, this is how we're going, and the guys who are going to get us there, that's who's going to play. And when I feel like that needs to change, it's going to change. And there's just not a lot of overthinking in that way. And that's where it just seems to me like the Leafs, however you want to say, are they a little grittier? Are they a little more edgy? Sure, you can also say that as well. But I think in terms of identity, it's just, Berube has just been very specific about, this is how we're going to do it, and we're not going to deviate a whole lot from that game to game, night to night, practice to practice. It's just very normal blue collar, and I think that's really helping the Leafs right now.
Helping the Leafs in many ways, but not yet on the power play. Like, it seems like if they're a top 10 power play away from being like a really real force this season, but they've got to get that sorted out, or it's going to come back to bite them. At least it feels that way. I mean, Kristen, you've seen every iteration of this Leafs power play, at least since Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner were at the helm for it. Like, why is this seemingly devolved over time?
Well, I would go back to the overthinking thing. It's, to me, when the Leafs power play, and I have seen it, yes, as you say, 8-9 years of the Leafs power play under, you know, now three different coaches. And it's always at its best when it's just the five guys on the ice moving the puck and shooting the puck. It just doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be super creative. It doesn't have to be, you just don't have to try so hard. And I see that. I see the way that the Leafs go out. You know, it's like they think that there has to be some sort of highlight involved in every power play, and there just doesn't. And you just want to be moving the puck as simply and as straightforward as you do at 5-on-5. And I feel like they have improved in that way under Berube, as I mentioned. And it's not translating for some reason to the power play. And I just think it's almost like you have this embarrassment of riches in terms of talent that you can put out there, and you can separate it across two units, and you can try out different pairings and all of that. But to me, it's just the Leafs are just doing too much. They always do too much on the power play, especially the last couple of years when it's struggling. When it's at its best, you just see someone's got the puck, they're whipping it at the net, someone's going in for a rebound, you get it, you know. It flows, and there's no flow right now. It just doesn't feel like the chemistry is there with the power play itself. So I chalk it up to what I have the last several years, which is just that they overthink it and they try to use all their creative powers. And I know that obviously that exists in abundance for these guys, but you don't need it any more so there than you do at 5-on-5 if that's not working. I mean, if it works, great, but it's just simplify it. Just do this, make the simple play, make the simple move, keep the puck in the zone, keep the pressure on. And just it just doesn't have to be, you know, that difficult. And obviously getting in the zone, those zone entries have to be clean, and they have to be, you know, more precise. And there's details. We all know that, you know, until we get into, you know, mid-November, defenses, special teams, you know, I've been doing a bit of a deep dive into special teams for, you know, clubs around the league. And you'd be surprised at how, you know, some penalty kills, you know, even are just struggling so much early on as well. It takes time to establish a rhythm. But when I look at the Leafs power play right now, I just see them doing too much, and simplify the game is just going to make it so much easier.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to dumb it down. That was my style of play.
Yeah.
And muck it up, you know, just be
exactly.
All brawn and less brain.
Sounds like a good power play.
Yeah. That's it. That's the motto. That's funny. Okay, so we got the Tampa Bay Lightning coming into town, and Kucherov has come out to a hot start. He's got seven goals, two assists for 9 points already. I was surprised because I didn't really know what a Steven Stamkos-less Tampa Bay Lightning's team would look like, and they're still red hot right off the bat. And the top of the Atlantic looks the same. Panthers, Bruins, Lightning, Leafs. It's like the same old. One and one again, looking like the start will be similar. But Kucherov specifically coming out and playing really hot off the top. Him versus Matthews tonight will be kind of the heading. What have you seen out of his game that's got him off on the right foot here?
You know, in Kucherov, I can appreciate about his game that he can dictate the pace of how a game goes if he wants to, if you let him. Like, he really just, because he can slow it down, he can speed it up, he can really, he's one of those players that just has so many tools to wield, and obviously the Leafs have players like that as well, but with Kucherov, it's so effortless. It never looks like, and again, we go back to trying too hard, it never looks like he's overexerting himself in overthinking what he's doing. It's just, it comes so naturally to him, the way that he's able to dominate. And that's where, if you let him get rolling, if you let him get that confidence, the way that you've seen him already develop and you've seen that snowball already this season, that's where it becomes such a problem. And I think it was Hedman talking about how he's really that dual threat, where it's not like you just have to worry about him being a great playmaker or a great passer, or that you just have to worry about him being a great goal scorer if somebody can set him up. Oh, no. You have to worry about the fact that he is going to be a tremendous playmaker in the same shift, that he's going to be able to, you know, put a puck in the net in some wildly creative way. So it really comes down to, how do you contain him? Because you're probably not going to be able to stop all of the things that he is able to do. But I appreciate how naturally everything just seems to come to Kucherov, and he doesn't have to, he just doesn't have to overthink it. And that's what makes him, I think, a special line mate for anyone in Tampa, because he just makes them better. And when you don't need a lot to make your game better, you're able to really pass on a lot to the guys around you. And I think that's why, obviously, everybody loves playing with Kucherov. But it's also, you know, if you look at the Lightning as a whole, and everyone wondered, you know, what would they look like without Stamkos, and how would they, you know, how would they adjust? But it's always just kind of been the next man up mentality for the Lightning. It's always been, you know, they've gone through injuries, they've had their salary cap struggles, and they stay, you know, hot in the regular season because they just have that depth. And Kucherov obviously is much more than a depth piece, but he, you know, when he's playing the way that he is, and when he brings that kind of confidence, I think everyone's able to kind of feed off of it. And you see that in how they've been able to, you know, continue and pick up, you know, where they have left off in the past with just being, you know, a beast of the Atlantic Division.
Yeah, let's stay inside that division that threatens to go unchanged given the start from the Panthers and Lightning and Leafs, and how the Senators, Red Wings, and Sabres just can't seem to take that next step, albeit very, very early. But I am interested in Boston and the potential for the Bruins to change in some ways this year. Over the weekend, of course, Jim Montgomery caught barking at Captain Brad Marchand. They go through the troubles with Swayman over the offseason. Patrice Bergeron, of course, a couple years now removed from the team, and maybe they are changing in some ways. I don't know if you do a combustibility ranking over there at ESPN, but if I did one, I feel like the Bruins have the potential to be high on that list. Montgomery, no contract for next year. Marchand, the same. It feels like everyone's a little bit on edge there in Boston, even after Jeremy Swayman got signed.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with you on that. And I thought going into the season that Boston was going to be an interesting case study because, you know, in the past, I have certainly been one that said, you know, it's got to be coming to an end now, right? This sort of, you know, these great season after season that Boston's able to produce, they're always near the top of the league. They've just won the President's Trophy recently. You know, they've had all of this regular season success. And then, you know, obviously in Toronto, we talk about them a lot because the Leafs seem to see them a lot in the postseason. And it just, you thought that, okay, if they were going to get the goaltending from Swayman after how he performed in the postseason. And it seemed like even with, you know, the changes that they made, that they were going to kind of be like a Lightning, and that it would just be next man up mentality. They'd fill in the holes, and, you know, Fabian Lysell was going to come in, and what kind of steps was Morgan Geekie going to make? And, you know, they had, you know, these guys that seemed to be ready to, you know, to kind of, you know, to step in, and it just hasn't really happened yet. And you can see the simmering sort of tension with Montgomery. And I thought that, you know, I know my colleague Greg Wyshynski, one of his, you know, sort of bold predictions for the season this year was that Jim Montgomery wouldn't survive in Boston, and that, you know, could still very well be the case. So I just see the Bruins as sometimes change is a good thing, but sometimes you lose a player like Jake DeBrusk and you think, okay, well, we're bringing in Elias Lindholm or we're bringing in Nikita Zadorov and this is going to be great for us, but you don't know how players are going to gel. You don't know how a team's chemistry is going to work and you don't know who's going to regress. Mm. And it's the regression part for Boston. I think it's more about what they're losing, whether it's in age, whether it's in personnel. It's more so than what they've added. Because again, it's a chemistry thing. That was the thing about Bergeron, is that somehow when he was there, it felt like he was always like the linchpin, if you know what I mean. Like he was just able to bring the group together all the time. The same way that Victor Hedman, I think, is kind of that player for the Lightning, where no matter what kind of turnovers happen, he has always been that guy. And it's no wonder they're the ones wearing the C, right? And does Marchand have that same ability in Boston to make everybody feel, you know, to bring them in and get that collaborative effort going? So I think we're obviously very new into this season, but I am curious to see where the Bruins go.
We just talked about how, you know, status quo the Atlantic looks. I think the Pacific might be the polar opposite. You got the Flames leading the division, Kings, Kraken, Vegas, Canucks, Ducks, Oilers, and Sharks. A little bit of a, you know, flip-flop for some of those teams. What's the most surprising for you when you look at some of the hot starts or poor starts that some of the teams have had out in the Pacific?
I mean, I don't know how you don't point to Calgary and say, totally saw that one coming, because I know I didn't. I didn't have that on my bingo card to start the year. But again, it's also, we sort of on the outside assume that how we view a team is how the team views itself, where we would think that, oh, well, the Flames, you know, when you compare them to, you know, compare them to Edmonton, like they don't have that same level of talent or they don't have that same pedigree of having been, you know, as deep into the playoffs lately and whatever else. But it's like, if they don't see themselves that way, if they don't see themselves as some like secondary character in the Pacific, like why not us? And I feel like that's the Flames mentality, is they're like, why not us? Why can't we be a good team? Why can't we step up and challenge some of these clubs? And when there's no pressure to do that, as opposed to on a team like Edmonton and Vancouver, who have obviously felt that pressure, it can make a difference. Just play your game. Again, it's just simplifying. And we don't know how long, you know, any kind of streak can last. We don't know if in a month from now we'll be saying, oh, remember how great the Flames were to start the year. Same way, you know, in Edmonton last year when it was 2-9-1 and Jay Woodcroft getting fired in, you know, what, November 13th. Last year, you know, we probably were, you know, and then 2 months later, we're talking about how good Edmonton is. It's all just, to me, it's not how you start, right? It's about where are we at in a couple more weeks once defenses settle in and everybody's kind of got the lay of the land. But I wouldn't say, well, maybe Winnipeg being, you know, the last undefeated team. I don't know if I would have bet on that one either. But I think Calgary is just, it's a great story. It's great to see that team, you know, sort of prove some of its doubters wrong just by playing good hockey and just playing their own brand of hockey and not necessarily, you know, giving into that mentality that, well, just because we've had some rough years or because people think we're quote unquote like fire selling, that we had to be bad. And I think you can see that guys are just having fun and sometimes that pays off.
All the pristine records in the NHL will be on the line tomorrow with the Frozen Frenzy. We got one game tonight. We got about a billion tomorrow, or 16 to be exact. Is that an overwhelming night for you or an exciting night with all 32 teams on deck?
You know what? I love it because it's just a great opportunity to see, obviously, everyone at once. It's like tonight you just see one, you know, you just see one game, two teams. But tomorrow you kind of get the whole swath of the whole league and you get to go around. And it's a great opportunity for me. I mean, even just as a hockey reporter, of course, but also just as like a hockey fan, someone who enjoys the game, you like to see everybody in action, especially teams that maybe you don't always get the opportunity to see. So I'm very excited for this day. Definitely one I circle, and you can bet that I'll have every screen that I have going tomorrow night, and I'll be watching all the teams that maybe I don't get to see quite as often.
Yeah, definitely the opposite from tonight. Just one game. It's Leafs and Lightning, and that one's on Prime in about half an hour. We appreciate you joining us, Kristen. Thanks so much. We'll definitely talk soon. Enjoy tonight and enjoy tomorrow.
Well, thank you so much for having me, guys. Yeah. Have a good night.
Thanks so much. Kristen Shilton of ESPN joined us there. Yeah, lots of excitement about tomorrow, mm-hmm. for sure. We'll have 16 games. I hope, I didn't look yet, but I hope they did the thing where it's like 7, 7:10, 7:15.
They did, yeah. Oh, okay. They're staggered nicely.
We're living in 2024, folks.
They're giving it the best red zone effort.
Red zone it up.
You know, would Scott Hansen have like the Octobox? I think that's like real special when there's the Octobox.
When there's eight?
I think there could be an Octobox tomorrow night. You have to
What's 16?
I don't know. If someone in the text
line knows that.
Well, they
wouldn't all be at the same time.
No. There won't be like the
full overlap. What's the most overlap?
The last game's at 11.
So what's the most overlap? If a game starts at 7, it could technically be going till 10.
I mean, I think 9:30 would kind of be the sweet spot.
If there's overtime.
Yeah.
So I think if you're tuning in around like 8 to 9, that could be the most amount of games you see.
We'll check it out tomorrow. We'll have to figure
out you know tomorrow.
The craziest moment of the NHL season at some point.
Okay, cool. So tonight, as we mentioned, it's just on Prime, Leafs and Lightning. I have my big boys parlay. And I mean big boys
as define big boys.
I mean big boys as like the big boys came to play, they're the big boys of the night.
Okay.
It's Kucherov and Matthews, obviously from Tampa and the Leafs.
The other boys are smaller than these three.
Like big boys in terms of presence.
Okay.
And Derrick Henry. I'm trying to add a little Monday Night Football. There's two games tonight, but I definitely felt like trying to pick a big boy from that second matchup was a stretch. So I like Kucherov, Matthews, and Henry. This is just like I like scoring tonight, goals, points, whatever. All of those three guys is only plus 550, but it's a fun one. It's a big boys parlay.
It's not a Sunday, but there are more NFL games tonight than there are NHL games.
That is
the two
crazy
Monday nighters. I steer clear of Tampa, Toronto, two good teams. We'll see what happens tonight. I just expect points in the NFL world. The Chargers and Cardinals, nightcap, low total. I think there's a potential for Kyler Murray to have a good game, and I think the Chargers will ultimately win the game. So I expect that one to go over actually pretty comfortably. I love the over in the second game. And then Baltimore-Tampa Bay, a match of two, honestly, MVP candidates. Mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield's been unbelievable. Lamar Jackson remains unbelievable. I think the total's around 50. I think it could fly over that given the quality of these two offenses and how they do lack something defensively. So lots of points on a doubleheader Monday Night Football pays plus 264.
Okay. We're in for goals and points tonight. So I just saw that Apple TV is going to be doing, well, they just tweeted this out. It's kind of the matchup that deserves its own documentary. The Dodgers and Yankees will face off in the 2024 World Series and will be on the ground capturing it all. Coming soon to Apple TV Plus. That had to happen.
Yeah, it's exciting.
We have documentaries about the worst things ever. This is going to be like one of the best things.
When do you hit your limit on? Like, I'm struggling to keep up with all the things
I was talking to you before this. I'm like months behind on everything.
Yeah, I am too.
This one might go to the top of the line though, depending on how.
Yeah,
it goes.
It'll take a while. Maybe it'll be like might be midsummer next year.
Oh, well, that'd be
and
nice.
It'll
to
fit
reminisce
in perfectly. That's actually the only time where I can watch TV. So
That's
that'll
true.
Be great.
But yeah, that will be a nice behind the scenes look at everything. We got elite lines clashing tonight. Nyes, Matthews, and Marner are outscoring their opposition at 4-0. And mm-hmm. Gensel, Point, and Kucherov outscoring their opposition 6-1. We also have Max Pacioretty back in the lineup. And Wall could be back as early as tomorrow. And a busy week of games for the Leafs. We got the game tomorrow night. They got Columbus, and we'll be doing that one on the radio as well. So there's a lot going on for the Leafs this week. But Pacioretty back, I think he's going to want to prove himself tonight.
Yeah, playing on the line with John Tavares and Nick Robertson. Interesting to see the Domi-Nylander connection not split up. Not that I was calling for that.
Oh, I like that line.
It does feel like, yeah.
As long as Domi shoots more.
That's the high-end variable line. Like that, they could have a great night.
It could
night.
Be amazing or like, whoa.
There also could be the reason why you're talking about the Maple Leafs and why it didn't work out, at least on a night-to-night basis. So, yeah, there's an obvious real top line on both teams. Exciting to see two top lines and two top teams go at it, but it might be one in the depths of the lineup with Max Pacioretty coming back in and playing with Tavares and Robertson.
Stolar's getting another start. He's been pretty good. We watched him on Saturday night against Shesterkin, and I mean, battle of two great goaltenders, it felt like.
Yeah,
as surprising
that
as that might have been, yeah.
Quality head-to-head run for Stolarz.
It was.
You get Igor, and then you get Andrei Vasilevsky on not
back-to-back
yourself
nights, couple
but
nights.
Two out of three. listen, he's looked like one of those goaltenders, at least to start the season. So we'll see if Anthony Stolarz can repeat that performance.
Okay, so we've got a more quiet night tonight, but a big one tomorrow. You can watch Lightning and Leafs tonight on Amazon Prime. And then tomorrow we've got every single game in the world happening all at once. So, well, a little bit spread out. It's nice.
Pre-game it up.
We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great night.